Good day, good night, and welcome to the All Elite Review Show live every Wednesday following AEW Dynamite. Welcome to the show. I'm Kevin Laramie, joined by Jason Highholm. Jason, how you doing this week?
I'm doing quite well, Kevin. Another interesting edition of AEW's Dynamite. A very, very entertaining show, and once again, another 2 hours that just fly by.
It's crazy how 2 hours seems to just go in like 30 minutes, and then you're like, oh wow, just 2 hours. And we'll go through the show. Also, since the last time we spoke, we do have the ratings for show number one, the best premiere, the best debut of a show in 5 years, the number two show in all of cable in the United States behind Playoff Baseball, a very good performance in the key demographic of the 18 to 49, even better in 18 to 35, doubling NXT. Episode number one of AEW Dynamite was a success, Jason.
It absolutely was, and you just said it there, where you're number two on all of cable, especially dominating NXT in the key demos, because those are the key demos that every network wants to have attention on, which is the 18 to 49 demographic. The only demographic that NXT was able to beat AEW in was the 50 and over crowd. So that's a huge win for AEW, and all the press, all the excitement that went in for AEW really worked out. Now the key is going to be for AEW to try to maintain that. I think they will for a little bit, but it's going to be interesting to see how well they can maintain the ride. They had a lot of press, a lot of media marketing their debut show. Wasn't much marketing this week, but we'll see what the numbers are after this past week's episode of Dynamite.
Well, this show, the second episode that we're going to review in a minute, feels like a transition from the event, the beginning, the debut of the show, through to a normal episodic show. With the few seeds of maybe potential feud, like Jack Hager with Hangman, we'll talk about that later with their feud, maybe starting on the ramp there in the main event and the interference, we'll talk about that later. But you know, I think that's what the feeling I got. The big glitz, the glamour, the superstars, the celebrities at ringside, that's all good for show number one, but you cannot maintain that level of hype for sure every single week. And I think this week it was more of a format that we might see repeated every week. And I kind of liked it. And it was a bit more focused on the tag team this show. And I think it was on purpose. Last week we did not see a men's tag team match, and we've seen a few tonight. And we've seen how AEW will treat tag team match with a lot more emphasis on heat, on comebacks, on well-timed team moves. And also the heat of a tag team where you're trying to get a team that is not necessarily that known, you make him shine. We'll talk about Private Party soon, but Jason, I really like this emphasis on tag team in show number two.
Well, when you look at just the brackets for this tag team tournament where they had their opening match, I mean, you just see the depth that AEW has in tag team wrestling. Even with a couple tag teams not in their tournament, like Santana and Ortiz, the former LAX, I mean, there's a lot of depth, a lot of potential for sensational matches, and they kick things off with a bang, pun intended, for Dynamite with the first matchup of this tag team tournament with Private Party and the Young Bucks, and those two just kept feeding off the crowd and the heat, because the building in Boston was ready for this. They were excited for everything, and they just kept lighting it up as this show went on.
Speaking of the building, I like the look of it. It's not as big of an arena as we're used to, but it has a different look, a different vibe, and it does remind me a lot of when WCW used to travel to different arena. The Greensboro Coliseum, two other places, really look different on TV than the cookie cutter arena of today that we see on other shows. This really felt different, right?
I mean, they're doing the smart thing. They ran a major market in the United States here in Boston. The Agonist Arena, I believe, where the University of Boston's men's and women's hockey teams play. So, I mean, that's smart. I mean, you can probably run a DC for the first show where, you know, a building where a professional team like the Washington Capitals play. But they're picking their spots where they know they're probably going to have a lot of success. And you see their moving down south in the United States. They're running those bigger venues, especially when they get to Charlotte, like the Charlotte or the Bojangles Coliseum, where they used to have a lot of big WCW shows. A couple UFC events have been there as well. So, I mean, that just shows that where I think they really think a lot of their audience will be. But starting off in a great locations and great venue picking for this start here in week two up on still the East Coast of the United States.
Show number two started with the Young Bucks versus Private Party, one of the first matches in this bracket for the tag team titles. A Dark Order have a bye in the first round, but we have this match, Young Bucks versus Private Party. Of course, the Young Bucks touted as the heavy favorite, seed number one heading into this match. Private Party, seed number eight. Of course, there's a storyline, Jason, of the Young Bucks getting themselves Private Party, traveling themselves and signing Private Party, sending them an invite to come to AEW Private Party. Of course, I really like the entrances here. Private Party has their own shtick, the little party, a club. They have their doorman with the felt rope, and they go in. They have their little shooter, and they come in to fight. But this was a heck of a tag team match. The Young Bucks, we don't need to explain a lot. They have been the most performant and consistent tag team in the entire wrestling world over the last decade. If you're honest with yourself, you'll agree with that statement. But against Private Party, they find a way. And you know, Jason, that's what is making me really interested in how AEW does things. We all knew the superstars heading into AEW until the Dynamite last week, right? We had Cody, Kenny Omega, and we had the Young Bucks as the number one stars, and Chris Jericho. Well, not even after a week and a half, we're already seeing superstars lose to other teams, making them better, raising their level, getting that rub. Private Party got the rub tonight, but it was quite a match to start up the second episode of AEW Dynamite.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the big thing for me was when AEW signed Private Party. There was a lot of people that watch House of Glory Wrestling that were like, they're good. I don't know how well they're going to fit in. But obviously the Young Bucks saw something in this team and obviously wanted to work with them in the opening match. And they just absolutely floored it. One of the best hot tags that we saw in this match from Mark Quinn, where he came in and hit, you know, her Tope Suicidas, you know, insane dives, 450 splashes over the top rope. Just got this crowd on fire. I thought the roof was going to blow off the Agnes Arena in Boston, Massachusetts here. But I mean, it also told a good story where the veterans, once they were able to slow down Private Party and not let them use their high flying offense, they were able to isolate Private Party and really go to work on the member Cassidy of the team. And then once he was able to make that hot tag, they made the big comeback. And then before you know it was just looked like the Bucks were going to move on, hit the Meltzer driver. Cassidy pulled Nick Jackson away, and then Mark Quinn was able to roll up Matt Jackson. And one of the biggest upsets, crowd was excited. I mean, give props to the Bucks, too. I mean, that's just showing you know where you're going to stand in your own company, that you're not afraid to get talent over, because, you know, 10, 15 years ago, this was going to be an issue for everyone. Yeah. That was one of the major problems of WCW, is those bigger names wouldn't get out of their own way to let new stars grow. Easily not a problem right now in AEW.
And that's what makes me really interested in the future, Jason, because knowing that they know that this is bigger than themselves, the success of this company, the ratings, the growth, the start of a new freaking wrestling boom is bigger than their ego and their win-loss record and getting themselves over. They're already over. They need to get the company over. They need to get their colleagues over, their opponents over. And that's what I've seen so far by the veterans of AEW. And that is positive, but not only that, it makes me hopeful. And that is fun.
Well, that's a big part of it, too, is, I mean, people need to get over, new names need to be made, and so far, so good. I mean, you already got a fresh tag team. I mean, they sold it also well where they cut to the other tag teams that were in the crowd, like SCU, and they were, you know, shocked, had egg on their face, shocked at the Private Party going over. And I think that was a big part of it. And as well in this match, one of the things we complained about last week, because in TNT they had the split screen when commercials were on with the live action. We got that on TSN. TSN, yeah. Listen, and 1 week they make the adjustments. That's huge also for what this product's trying to do as well. Keep the fast-paced action going and keep the viewer invested.
It wasn't constant. It wasn't every commercial, but the first one, I have it written down right here, and I was exactly thinking the same as you do. And that's why I was saying on last week's show, I'm like, I know TSN. They usually do it when it's a product that demands for it. So we're probably going to see it, and we saw it on this show. So Private Party moving on in the tag team tournament. Big upset, and they have beaten the Young Bucks, maybe the favorite of this tournament. So we'll see what comes of Private Party. But that was a fun match, and Private Party are a lot better off after the match than before. And that's already a good thing for them. Now Jericho comes out with his entourage, and they start to do his promo, and he introduces everyone, and he says, Yance, he's like, I was asked all week. Like, is this going to be a thing? Are you guys going to stay together? Are you going to... Yes, we are. Yes, the answer to all the question. Then we had the We the People when he was introducing Hagar. And I love how he dealt with it, Jason. He literally like, We the People sucked. It was a bad idea coming out of bad creative. Now drop it. Let's move on. We are the Inner Circle, baby.
Yeah, that was arguably the best promo this year. And when Jericho is in that zone, there's only a handful of guys that can really touch Chris Jericho. And this is going to be the valuable piece that Chris Jericho has. It can really help people get confidence with their promos. But this group also has three young guys that are getting the solid rub, as we mentioned off the top. Sammy Gervais, who Jericho called a Spanish god. Then he called Santana and Ortiz a wild, crazy pit bulls, and then did, you know, his little tribute to Eddie Guerrero, whose birthday is today, saying Viva La Raza. Yeah. And then, of course, when the crowd chanted We the People, I think this was, to me, the best part, because he was like, nope, that was a bad idea. It was stupid. It's dead and buried. And, you know, he's just Jake Hager, like a legit badass, which is what I was saying last week, that AEW has to market Hager as that, a legit badass with a legit, you know, wrestling background. And now,
and you know what, it's not false. He said he might be the most dangerous man in both MMA and professional wrestling at heavyweight. You know, maybe not, yeah, against some of them, but you know, you put Jake Hager in a cage against Brock Lesnar or Cain Velasquez right now, Jake Hager might win. Like, that's because it's a long time ago that Velasquez and Lesnar were to the level of Jake Hager's fighting right now.
Well, it's going to be a big test for, you know, AEW putting this marketing on Hager. He does have a fight coming up in 2 weeks with Bellator on one of their bigger shows on the 21st. It's one of a more tougher competition for him. When you look at who he's going to be fighting for Bellator MMA on October the 25th, a Friday night, Bellator 231, where he'll be taking on Anthony Garrett, who's a 4-2 fighter. So he has been fighting maybe the greatest competition. This is his toughest test, but a win here not only solidifies Hager going up the ranks in the Bellator heavyweight division, it solidifies what they've been marketing him as. And I think that's going to be a huge key success for this Inner Circle group. And I love the name of the group as well. When you looked at these guys being put together, it was really, you know, look like a bunch of unorganized toys in your toy drawer, but this really worked out. Jericho solidifies it. Jericho was on a roll. I want at least one Jericho promo segment a week on this program, because that was entertaining as all heck.
You know, the fact that he changed this style just enough to be different from the last time we saw him regularly on television, he looks a bit different. He's a bit more pudgy, but he's a bit more bulky too. And you do have the idea that, you know, the name of his faction, of his group, came organically. It didn't, right? It's probably a group of guys around a table with a couple beverages saying, well, what do we call this damn thing? But the way he introduced it, the way he talked about it, then first pronounced the damn words, Inner Circle, wasn't a normal sentence, like a fluid sentence. Like, yeah, those guys are with me. They're closest to me. They're the closest human beings to me on the planet Earth. They're my inner circles. And, you know, we are the inner circle, baby. It feels organic. And that's what this damn place needs. The reactions like this. And it makes sense. And you're like, oh, yeah. They call it the inner circle because those guys are his inner circles. It makes sense.
And he solidified it because he was like, I recruited all of these members to be in my group. And and like Jake Hager, he like legit did recruit, but he adds the emphasis of I recruited all of these guys. I saw their talent and I wanted them to be with me because I'm only the best and I want the best with me. So I was like, oh, well, brilliant. It solidified the group. It solidified Chris Jericho as being one of the best. And then he also plugged, you know, the match with Cody and why that's an important match on pay-per-view, saying, you know, I'm going to get the win. I'm going to roll around Baltimore with a little bit of the bubbly afterwards.
And the pop that he got once he said that. Oh, the pop. This place went crazy.
I mean, that was arguably one of the best promo segments I've seen in a while. Maybe just because it was Jericho. It was the only promo segment on the show, as opposed to a WWE segment where you have like three or four on it. So it really stood out that much more.
Yeah, and everything to how they all entered the ring differently, to the feeling of those guys are the main event in this place. Those guys rule the place. They're running roughshod. And that's what the feeling we had. And that's what we're asking for. And he was getting cheered during his promo. He put the kibosh to that, like, shut up, you people. And that's what you need. Heels that want to be healed, not heels that want to be fans. And that's just positive. The next match on the show, Jimmy Havoc versus Darby Allin. The winner gets a title shot next week on Dynamite versus Chris Jericho. Darby Allin gets that title shot for next week, undefeated on television, still Darby Allin.
Yeah, Darby Allin now, because they are booking on records, is now what, 2-1-1 in AEW with two wins. Coming on the pre-show or the dark matches and was aired yesterday on the debut of AEW Dark, a win over Shima, and now this win here over Jimmy Havoc. I mean, this match was good. I mean, it's really solidified Darby Allin as this so super hot young baby face that of all the young guys in AEW, I didn't think it would be Darby Allin, but that match with Cody he had back in the summer really solidified him as being someone special. And he comes out. This coffin drop finish is one of the most over finishes that is in AEW because there's such a high risk, high reward for it. And we saw how he put it on Cody and missed on the ring apron. But, you know, he's now won two matches with it. And I think when people know he's going for it, they get excited because they don't know what's going to happen. And when he hits it, it's a finish. No one's kicking out of it. No many, you know, six or seven near fall attempts that we see currently today. Yeah. I think that's huge for the success of Allin as well, that he has a solid finish. And now he's going to wrestle Chris Jericho next week for the AEW Championship, a match I'm really excited to see.
Finishes. That's something that I have noticed as well. There's an emphasis on finishes, and it's important. I think finishes are an afterthought sometimes, and the finish has to make sense. The move has to look like it hurts, not just for fans, and not just spectacular, not just for the hardcore. Of course, if you listen to this live after the show on Twitter, social media, you're probably categorizing yourself as a hardcore. That's fine. But this show is catering to even more than that now on the platform it's on TNT. So I do think that the finishes have to make sense for everyone, for the layman, for my grandfather or my uncle watching or my sister or my wife. It has to be like, okay, yeah, there's no way he's going to get up after that. And he doesn't. Voila. It's not that hard.
No, not that hard at all. And you got to get finishes over. And that's exactly what, especially with the young talent. Like, and they've done it, obviously, with Jericho, with his Judas effect. When Cody hits his crossroads, that's a finish. But especially for the young talent, they hit their big moves. They have to mean something. They have to be a finish. And we're off to a great start doing that with AEW, especially with, as we said, Darby Allin here, who will now wrestle Chris Jericho next week in a match I'm so excited to see. Just the different styles. But that's next week.
woman tag team match between Bea Priestley Sakura, who is the trainer. She's a legend in Japan for many different organizations, from All Japan to New Japan to places like Shimmer and other places. Sakura, she's a trainer of Riho as well, so she was tag teaming with Bea Priestley versus Britt Baker and Riho. Britt Baker obviously is one of the contenders to the title of Riho, and I thought, Jason, they were going to make that famous, oh, tag team partners that are not going to get along. No, this is actually was set up to maybe throw us a curveball and put Britt Baker in a situation where she has to get over Bea Priestley before being able to grab that opportunity at Riho. And Sakura was just a little pawn in that storyline. I like where sometimes you think you know where they're going, and they just deviate just a little bit to make you wait a little bit more and appreciate it when it comes.
Well, they've done a pretty good job building up this storyline for Dr. Britt Baker and Bea Priestley. It was Bea Priestley that eliminated Dr. Britt Baker from that Women's Battle Royal back at the pre-show, or the buy-in, I should say, for All Out, the pay-per-view at the end of August. So I do like that. And then they had that tag match. They were in a tag match on the debut episode of AEW Dark. So they are building that up. I'm waiting to see it as a singles match. And, you know, as we mentioned last week, they've got that AEW got Riho, their women's champion, over to a really high level. But they're getting Britt Baker over as an excellent babyface. And this combination Rings of Saturn, mandible claw finish, I'm really starting to dig. Britt Baker's starting to be one of those female talent that's just going up a high ceiling, up the ceiling pretty quickly for AEW.
Now, we did have an Orange Cassidy sighting again. He's in the crowd. He was just actually dressed the way I'm dressed right now on video, pretty much, with a beautiful, glorious Canadian tuxedo, and then just barely raising his finger, giving the thumbs up. The lights go out. Oh, what's happening? Sean Spears makes his entrance, called the chairman of AEW, because a chair is always by his side. And on the other side, Tully Blanchard, formerly of the Four Horsemen, as his manager. I like that. And I like the... just a look, Tully doesn't have to say anything. He can do a few moves. He did in this one. Hit a John Moxley a few times. But I like that vibe. I like the manager back. And John Moxley, with his new music, Jason, looking good. The music sounding good. And his new look, John Moxley in short tights. Black shorts. I was not expecting that.
Well, he's debuted that new look out in New Japan, and it's I like it. I mean, he's just a wild man kind of shoot fighter style. And, you know, this is a pretty big match, I thought, for AEW, and it was one of those where I knew you couldn't have a disqualification finish because it's only your second episode. You're trying to build up this Moxley Omega match, which is one of the big co-main for the pay-per-view coming up on November 9th. And Sean Spears in just a really weird spot here. It seems like wherever this guy goes, just weird spots are finding him. With this match, though, they had Pac on commentary, who was out there pretty much arguing, how come I'm not getting a number one contender spot? Yeah. I'm 2-0 in AEW. I've beaten two big names in Kenny Omega and Hangman Adam Page, but I'm not getting the title shot. So I like that he was just, you know, a heel's always supposed to come across correct and just argue and vent about the truth, which is really true. Why wasn't he getting it? But didn't have to go to your typical heel ways of just, you know, ragging on Boston and their sports teams on the commentary. He was very quiet, to the point, hit his stuff, and that was really all we heard from him in what was a pretty solid match between Moxley and Spears.
Yep, it was a pretty solid match. And of course, for the retaliation, after we saw Kenny Omega show up with a bat with barbed wire around it, but also a broom with barbed wire around it as well. He's standing there on top of the ramp, looking down on Moxley, throwing the bat his way, and be like, let's get this on, brother. Let's go after it. Let's settle this. But no, Pac coming around the set with his chair, with the chair laid down there by Sean Spears earlier in the match, hits Kenny Omega, and then infuriates as well John Moxley, because John Moxley can't fight Omega because Omega's already down. He's not the type of guy who's going to hit someone who's already down. I kind of like that go around. I was wondering, like, are they going to give us Kenny Omega versus Moxley with weapons right away, right now on that ramp? They had to find a way out to delay it, to make us want it more. They did. Pac with the chair.
Yeah, and I think it adds an interesting element to the storyline, because are we going to see Pac maybe interfere in the match at the pay-per-view, because it was Pac that replaced Moxley at AEW's All Out pay-per-view. So I think it adds a nice little sprinkle and development of this storyline as well, because there's Pac's also in a weird spot in his own right, where he's obviously really talented, was one of the bigger original signings that AEW has, got him back after he did step away from the company for a little bit. But I'm just interested to see where this leads to. Is he going to be a big figure? Is it going to maybe be a triple threat? I hope it's not, but he's now has to be involved in this storyline, just trying to vent his frustration out against two of the bigger names that this company has.
I know, and because of Pac's experience and his look and his character, they want to make him feel part of it too, so they're finding ways to get him included in the conversations and the big discussions. And I think that's important too, that you have guys that have a legitimate grief against the company, saying, look, because you can only have one title contender, and you might have two guys with the exact same record, the exact same level of opponent they beat. They'll be like, we both deserve it, but only one will get it. Then it creates a storyline here and there. You have a lot of opportunities to create storyline, and I like that AEW is usually taking those opportunities when they come around. Now it's time for the main event. Dustin Rhodes, called The Natural. That's his name now, The Natural. Not bad.
Which I love. That's fantastic.
He's natural.
I just thought it was a little slip or a nice homage to WCW by Tony Schiavone off the start, but no, they're calling him The Natural.
Yeah, when I first saw his snap body slam, when he nailed it, I was like, yeah, he still got it. That was beautiful. And then I thought we were going to see the Shattered Dreams, but no, they're going to milk that, but they're going to milk a lot of stuff, and that's where I want to go. I like that, the interference. And you know, oftentimes we talk about their interference. No one comes to the help of the baby faces. They're there, no one's helped them. They're supposed to have friends in the locker room. Which, by the way, if you didn't notice, there's two entrances. Which, it makes sense, right? You have a heel locker room and a baby face locker room. They don't enter from the same side. It's stupid, but it makes sense. It's not true in the backstage. It's just there for show, but it works. Anyways, what I was going to say is I like the fact that the Young Bucks came to help. And then Darby Allin's going to face Chris Jericho next week. He came to help. I like that. And I really enjoyed what I'm going to talk about now. And that's MJF coming out. And we all know MJF looks, he's a heel, right? He's a heel persona when he's in single, but he's the best friend of Cody Rhodes, and he keeps saying he's the best friend. We all know that he's not. We all wondering, when is that turn going to come? And another amazing tease tonight, Jason. He comes out, he's got a chair, and you have the Inner Circle there stomping on Cody and making sure that he's like not moving, and then they're holding up, looking at MJF with the chair, and MJF just there thinking, what do I do? Oh, then you think he's going to hit Cody, but he deviates at the last seconds, hits all the Inner Circle, clears the ring, and saves the day. That MJF tease. They're going to milk it until we're going to believe it's not going to happen, and then they're going to pull the trigger. God, I love the fact that they're going to wake us with for at least 6 months to a year to do it.
Yeah, the last 10 minutes of this show, each and every week from the build-up to the finish of Dustin Rhodes, Hangman Page versus Jericho and Sammy Guevara was excellent stuff. Obviously, as you mentioned, the heels get the win, but then it's just beatdowns. Then you go to the lights go off and you think maybe we're going to get a new debut, but it's Cody. And then he's jumped by Santana and Ortiz, and then more people, MJF comes in. I mean, it's just the last 10 minutes of AEW being total chaos and anarchy is the best part of TV each and every week. It's going to be tough to maintain that because you're going to have to go home with something solid one of these weeks. But the past 2 weeks, you know, going off with anarchy is just fantastic. And, you know, you have potentially a program maybe being set up with Jake Hager and Hangman Adam Page. You clearly have a tag program set up with Santana Ortiz versus the Young Bucks. We know Jericho and Cody. I mean, just such great stuff. And then when the heels think they're going to get their way, here comes Darby Allin down the ramp on his skateboard, jumps Jericho and just gets an amazing ovation. Just set you up to why you need to watch the next week's broadcast. It's simple, but simple always works in professional wrestling.
Simple, yes, because simple, it doesn't mean that it's not done right. It just means that it's the exact opposite. Simply, but done right is usually the best solution. We have now the lineup for the next edition of AEW Dark that will be on YouTube in the next couple of days. It will be Kip Sabian with Peter Avalon and Sunny Kiss in a dark match. You also have Joey Janela, Kenny Omega. That will be a match in AEW Dark, the second episode next week. But let me know your thoughts before we say goodbye today, Jason, of the first episode of AEW Dark. AEW Dark, it's getting late for me, that was posted yesterday.
AEW Dark, I thought was a good program, but I thought there's some things I'd like to see. I'd like to see some more promos from the talent that are going to be on Dynamite the following day to break it up. It felt like the match, you're going to get good match quality, but it felt almost like a chore towards the end. And you don't want to have that, especially for a new company. I know it's a secondary show and easy access for fans, but I'd like to see some more promos, some video packages or something just to break it up, because the matches, while important in terms of building up guys that you can't fit on the Dynamite broadcast and getting them wins and stuff, I'd like to have a little less of that and maybe building more the more important stuff and why viewers should tune in, because Tuesday's also the NWA released their debut of their new show called Power. And I thought the NWA show in 1 hour was able to establish a lot of talent on their show better than AEW had on their debut of Dynamite in some aspects. And I think that's a big congratulations for the NWA. But that's what I would like to see from Dark. And I know the Joey Janela, Kenny Omega match is actually taping right now as we're recording. So that's going to be a big selling match. You have a big star on there as well. I think that's going to be huge for week two in terms of the YouTube viewership as well, to see Kenny Omega in kind of out of his element, a hardcore style match.
Yeah, what's it? It's a branded as here. Let me get it. It's branded as a unsanctioned lights out match between Joey Janela and Kenny Omega.
And if you've never seen Joey Janela before, you're in for a treat. This guy puts his body on the line.
Good luck. It reminds me of a few guys I was watching on ECW, the original, but back when it was an ECW arena, and they were literally tearing down that arena to beat each other with it. Yeah, the plunder. You'll find a lot of plunder when you see Joey Janela fight.
Yeah, I mean, Joey Janela can also wrestle, but he's not afraid to use his body for the benefit of people's entertainment. But, I mean, yeah, so that's what's going to be for Dark on Tuesday around 6 o'clock uploaded by AEW. But I thought they concluded tonight's episode 2 really well. I mean, the storyline also of MJF, is he going to be – when is he going to turn on Cody? Because the fans can sense he's going to turn.
Oh, yeah.
But
I hope they wait.
Don't know when it's going
to
be.
They have to wait long time. It's like Peter Griffin fighting the chicken. It's like when when Peter Griffin scrapes his knee and he waits about 5 minutes while rubbing it and saying, well, there's a lot of things interesting in there where you go through different phases, different stages of emotion. Be like, oh yeah, MJF's gonna turn. Oh, he's not gonna turn. He's gonna turn next time. And then you're like, well, he might never turn. He's not gonna turn. Of course he's not gonna turn now. He says, oh wait, he just turned. That's what you want. The moment where we're not gonna expect it anymore, they have to pull the trigger. Now we expect it. We're gonna expect it for 6 months. That's why they have to wait and wait and wait and maybe have it at a moment that we really don't expect it.
I think that's going to be the thing. But also, while MJF obviously is over as a heel and one of the best fresh heels to hit professional wrestling in the last 5-6 years, he, while over as a heel, he's going to be twice as much over as a babyface. Like, he has such natural charisma. One of the best, arguably the best talker in AEW, easier enough for me to say. So I think they may want to try this experiment out and run with it for as long as they can.
Here's an idea. They say they're best friends. Cody is going to have his match at Full Gear with Chris Jericho. I imagine Chris Jericho will maybe retain. If retains, we'll see if Cody moves on to another feud, or maybe Cody and MJF, if MJF saves him a couple times and they really could become best friend, and they do something, maybe they become a tag team together, and maybe they go after the championship, and maybe you make that story work for once. You do a story that we have seen multiple times on another wrestling show that is not done properly, and you make a tag team championship run with all the little details made there for just one reason. You plant all the seed for when they broke up, and you can even actually make him break up and do a double turn. Cody turns heel when they break up, and MJF turns babyface at that moment. That might be the ultimate goal and direction of this damn thing, will be to have a double turn at the end and have MJF, one of the big baby faces, and a Cody have his heel run down the line.
Yeah, I mean, I never thought of it that way. Obviously, you'd have to wait months and months because Cody's arguably the biggest baby face this company has and came across as a true superstar last week. But that's a very interesting idea. I don't think a lot of people thought of that. But I think it's just one of the other many stories that AEW has that people are really interested in seeing how they play out, as opposed to the competition, which has only a handful of storylines that get either squashed quickly or make no logical sense.
I'm available to book your wrestling program whenever you want. sportspodcastingnetwork@gmail.com. Do not be shy. On that note, we'll wrap it up for this week. Hope you enjoyed the show. Jason, let the listeners know where they can find you if they want to interact on social media.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at J Hagholm, H-A-G-H-O-L-M, and the number one.
You can find me at Kev Laramie, and you can find this show everywhere you get your podcasts: Spotify, Apple Podcasts, also Google Play Store, live on Twitter after AEW Dynamite every week, just a few minutes after the live broadcast on TNT and TSN. Jason and I go live on Twitter to review All Elite. You can find us on Twitter at All Elite Review, and you can find the podcast version of this show everywhere you get your podcasts, and also on sportspodcastingnetwork.com, our brand new website that has just been redesigned. So we hope you enjoy. But as always, until next time, for Jason Hagholm, I'm Kevin Laramie. See you next week.